this is a war between the government and the Tamil people.
I'm not a fucking terrorist. You are the terrorist.
People are crying out for justice in this country.
If you've got to be militant to achieve your aims and your aspirations, so be it.
There's a real hypocrisy from the big corporations.
The people from below will push for real change.
This Australia is going to be shocked, and then the public will say, what the hell's going on?
G'day, you are tuned to RTRFM 92.1. This is the Indie Media Show, and we are broadcasting from the unceded lands of the Whadjuk Noongar people. I'd like to offer my respects to them and their elders past and present, and acknowledge that this always was and always will be Aboriginal land, especially on this WA Day, formerly Foundation Day. You know, just like Australia Day, it, you know, marks the invasion of of this land. Always will be, always will be, always was, always will be Aboriginal land. I'm a little muddled today, apparently. Cheers to Jeff for a chilled out couple of hours for On The Record. They'll be back to their normal programming tomorrow, I believe. It's a public holiday, so it's a bit more of a chill day here on RTR. But not for Indie Media. We've got some very hardcore news for you today. A little later on, we will be chatting to Ruwa Community Services Head Deborah Zanella about the recent knockback that the City of Perth gave to their relocation of their drop-in centre how that's pushed them back. We'll be chatting a little bit about that. And we are launching a new community grassroots action. We'll be talking about the Burrup Hub up north, which is related to the Scarborough Gas Project that the Say No to Scarborough campaign has been challenging. But we're here to launch sort of a new thing, Disrupt Burrup Hub, which is looking to actively stop it. In a moment, we'll be chatting to Jared Mazza from them about the project and their plans and how he disrupted Albo's press conference yesterday. Today. Very exciting stuff. You are on RTRFM 92.1, the sound alternative. And this is the Indie Media Show, your community and activist news program, your kind of citizen journalist kind of thing. And we are here with Jared Mazza to talk about Disrupt Burrup Hub. So the Burrup Hub is Australia's most polluting fossil fuel project ever. One of its major developments that you might have heard about is in the Scarborough gas field, which was recently given support by Federal Labor just after they've come into power. And this project would completely blow out. Technical difficulties there. Oh my God. This project would completely blow out Labor's net zero emissions target by 2050. And here to chat about it and disrupt Burrup Hub is Jared Mazza. How's it going, mate?
Hi, Janie. Good. Yeah, thanks for having me.
It's good to have you back in the studio. We chatted a couple months. You were here on behalf of the Say No to Scarborough campaign. Let's just get a little bit of an update of how that campaign's going. I know you're not really with them anymore, but...
I mean, it's all part of a big, broad kind of coalition. Of everyone doing their own part.
For sure.
I mean, look, yeah, kind of a big blow, I guess, in the last couple of weeks with Labor coming out strongly in support of Scarborough. Mm. Scarborough is an absolute carbon bomb, and it was named recently by The Guardian as one of the biggest and most dangerous fossil fuel projects proposed, not just in Australia, but in the whole world. So,
my God.
To have that support from Labor was pretty disappointing. But I must say as well, not surprising. Labor have been supportive of this thing the whole way through. Albanese spoke supportively about Scarborough even before the election campaign. So, sadly, we're in this country where we kind of live in a captured state where the big fossil fuel companies have their hands in both political parties and donate masses of money to both political parties. But in terms of the campaign, I guess that it's definitely growing awareness of what Scarborough is, and over east as well. I think that that's developing as well. But I think now we really need to kind of ramp it up a level. Like, you know, we can't let this stuff happen. And it's huge.
So how does the what is the Burrup Hub and how does it relate to the Scarborough Gas Project?
Yeah, so the Burrup Hub is Woodside's gas facilities on Murujuga Country in the Burrup Peninsula, and they've already got their gas processing facilities that process offshore gas. Woodside want to expand the Burrup Hub by building another processing train, and they want to use that to take gas from the Scarborough field, which is 1.6 billion tonnes of emissions, and now they're talking about using the Burrup to process the Browse Basin, which is even more emissions than Scarborough. So there's plenty more in the pipeline. It doesn't stop at Scarborough. And they're looking at doing fracking in the Kimberley. That gas that they're going to frack in the Kimberley, they're looking at piping into the Burrup. So it really is like the epicentre of the evil empire of fossil fuels in WA.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Last time you were on, we were chatting about how it's right near some ancient Murujuga rock art. Is that the same? You were talking about how you look at this rock art and then you turn around and you can see, you know, the hub and all of its, you know, pollutants and everything.
Yeah, I mean, it's right there. And they in the 80s, they blew up 5,000 pieces of rock art to make way for the Karratha gas plant.
5,000.
And they've been moving rock art. You know, in 2007, they moved a fair bit of rock art. This time, they won't be moving rock art, but the gas emissions are proven, peer-reviewed research proven to degrade that rock art. Now, that's World Heritage listing. That's World Heritage. It's on the list to become a World Heritage listed area. And there's a really, really cool grassroots campaign called Save Our Songlines, which is run by traditional owners of Murujuga, who are saying, nah, this isn't good enough. We don't want this. We haven't properly consented to this. And we don't want these gas giants knowingly destroying this for, you know, their sacred heritage and culture, and for all of us, this wonderful world heritage.
Federal Labor's backed the Scarborough gas field project. Have they backed the, you know, all of these other projects that are coming through the Burrup Hub as well?
Yeah. So in the same interview where Madeleine King, the Labor Resources Minister, was talking about Scarborough, she was also talking about Browse. She was saying that she has full support for both Scarborough and Browse, and that it's not going to be harder to get up fossil fuel projects in this company. Now, you know, this just makes me furious because we've got Albanese, who's been kind of talking up his climate credentials, and then you've got one of his key ministers saying, "No, we're gonna keep going with fossil fuels."
Yeah, because you hear it over and over again about the result of this election and how it's finally the climate election. You know, the people have spoken.
Yeah.
You know, with the teal independents coming in, you know, the Greens getting a couple more seats, but Just like a quick one. Do you know much about the Teals and their support for these projects?
Yeah, it is a very interesting one. And I might just say that climate election thing, I think, you know, that is true. But we've got to remember, Labor didn't campaign on climate. They avoided it as much as they could. The reason this was the climate election was because those major parties got such small primary votes, historically low primary votes,
well,
and climate candidates were the ones who took them off them. But look, in terms of the Teals, we'll see. So Kate Chaney, who's actually my local MP, in her campaign, she refused to comment on individual fossil fuel projects, including Scarborough, and she favours like a market mechanism of removing subsidies for these projects. Now, that might stop some of the other 114 fossil fuel projects proposed in Australia, but that's not going to have an impact on Scarborough. So
yeah, because this is like money coming in from all over the world.
Yeah.
And like you were saying in our last interview that like from these projects, not a cent is even going to go into like Australian hands. It's all going to multinational corporations.
Very little.
You are listening to RTRFM 92.1. This is the Indie Media Show, and I'm chatting to Jared Mazza about the Burrup Hub up north, Woodside's massive carbon bomb project. Jared is with Disrupt Burrup Hub, and you recently disrupted Albo's press conference when he came to Perth to... What was he trying to chat about?
Yeah, so Albo was in Perth yesterday, and I got a bit of a tip off about 15 minutes before to say, hey, Albo's going to be down in South Perth, and he was at some kind of Labor event where they were celebrating the election win, and I just contacted a friend, made a sign out of a cardboard box in about 10 minutes. Nice. And then we cruised down and all we did was stand behind him and hold up our signs in his shot, but his security detail jumped on us, the cops jumped on us, and he finished the event. His media advisor said, let's get out of here, and they bolted. And there were some Free Assange protesters as well. That was great.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. You should have baked a pie. You should have made a banana pie.
Yeah. Well, there were some good photos of us kind of photo bombing Albo. And, you know, I think that's some pretty minor disruption, really. But yeah. it is pointing towards this is going to be something that's going to follow him around, this issue.
Like, absolutely.
This is something that I think if Labor keep doing what they're doing on, they're gonna bleed even more votes to other third options next time round. Yeah.
So they've got to toe the line. So let's talk about Disrupt Burrup Hub. You're launching it today here right now.
That's
on the show.
So this is the first kind of public outing
world
for Disrupt Burrup Hub. That's right, you've got
media.
A world exclusive. So Disrupt Burrup Hub is a emerging network coalition of grassroots climate activists and cultural heritage activists as well, who are willing to do direct action, which means go to those Woodside facilities and shut down their operation and shut down their construction, because that's the only way that we're going to do this. The fossil fuel industry is not going to shut itself down. It's going to take huge amounts of pressure. And I think it's time that we start messing with the actual kind of infrastructure which is destroying a livable future.
Yeah, is there a feeling of frustration that you can only do so much when you're trying to pressure, local groups that get sponsorship from Woodside or whatever, you know, like trying to pressure Fringe World to drop their support and try to pressure, like, the Dockers and drop their support or whatever? Like, that can only get you so far eventually.
If you really want
to stop it, you're going to have to go in and do it yourself.
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of different parts of the work that need to be done.
For sure.
And, like, all of it is valid and useful. But, yeah, I think it's kind of time to stop asking and time to start doing.
For sure.
Time to get in there, yeah.
And so what kind of tactics is that going to involve? Are you going to be tying yourself to train tracks and things like that?
Potentially. I mean, yeah, I guess that I probably won't go too deeply into that right now in case any of our friends from WA Police are listening. But there was a group called the Scarborough Gas Action Alliance who did this late last year. Who blockaded the only road in and out of the Burrup Hub, and they were there for a change of concrete barrels. They were there for, I think it was about 14, 16 hours, and stopped thousands of vehicles going in and basically stopped work for that day. So I guess that's kind of a little bit of a prototype, and there are other prototypes too. You know,
like
this
in
happened
Newcastle recently.
Yeah. And even in WA, so Browse, which they want to process at the Burrup, they initially tried to start a processing facility for that in the Kimberley at James Price Point. And there was a massive direct action campaign that was part of the successful campaign to stop that James Price Point development at that time. And now, all these years later, they're wanting to do Browse again, but they're wanting to do it in, on Murujuga at the Burrup.
Yeah, because you stop these projects, but the gas is still sitting there, and they're going to want it eventually.
Yeah.
So, what kind of what kind of a response are you expecting from Woodside when you start to take some of this direct action?
Look, I mean, they're probably not going to like it. And the thing about Woodside is they don't want any attention on this because they know that. They know that this is destructive and this is totally incompatible with all the advice of the scientists. No matter how they try and spin it, and they try and spin it really hard, they're aware of what's going on. So ultimately, they want to avoid any kind of attention. And I guess it's our job, one of the roles of doing these more kind of confrontational actions is to draw that attention, draw that spotlight and point to the problem and say, this is the problem. This is what we need to change.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, that's great. And you're like sort of launching the public side of this, like you're working on a website and stuff like that.
Yeah, we tried to have the website ready for today, but it's not quite ready. But disruptburruphub.com, if you check that out, Hopefully within the next couple of days, there'll be a way to kind of express interest, I guess, in getting kept up to date.
For sure.
We'll do some, like, public meetings and workshops, I imagine, sometime in the future. And we're going to kind of reach out to and invite, you know, all the different groups or people who are doing this stuff. Like, it's a network more so than like a group in a way, trying to bring together people like Extinction Rebellion and the Scarborough Gas Action Alliance and other people who can all come together and hopefully share tips and strategy and all that kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Is there any way that listeners can sort of get involved at this point, or are they just going to have to wait?
Oh, yeah.
Not
quite at that level of organisation. But, yeah, hopefully later today or tomorrow, disruptbarratpub.com, or you can look me up on Twitter or something, Jared _ Mazza, and send me a message, or we can work it out. Yeah.
Excellent. So, stay tuned, folks. We'll update you on that in the coming weeks. Ruat Community Services is planning to build a major hub for domestic violence sufferers in Northbridge. But in order to do that, they need to relocate their community drop-in centre for the homeless, where they link people to accommodation, ID services, Centrelink, alcohol and drug support services, and like other staff. The new site would be just 200 metres around the corner, but the City of Perth has knocked back their bid to relocate, with Perth Mayor and Channel 7 sports commentator Basil Zemplis saying that Perth and Northbridge carry a disproportionate burden of homelessness services. So with their plans to build this domestic violence centre now knocked back and lots of anti-homeless rhetoric flying around, I got in touch with Deborah Zenella, Rua Community Services Chief Executive, about their situation. And I started by asking her what their organisation does.
So Rua is a community service organisation. It's been in existence since about 1959, and we work in the areas of homelessness, family and domestic violence, and mental health, severe and persistent mental health. And often there's, you know, intersectionality between all of those service areas, but they're the areas that we've been working in since about 1959.
Yeah, right. So what happens at the drop-in centre? What kind of services do you provide for these people?
So the drop-in centre, or we also call it an engagement hub, is really a crisis place, a crisis service for people who are experiencing homelessness, and particularly street-present homelessness. And so it provides a place to have a shower, a place to get a cup of coffee, to talk to our support workers, to begin to lodge an application for housing if they've not been able to do so. Often it's about having to be able to assist them to get ID, because obviously if you're street present, you know, looking after your belongings is really difficult. And so often clients or people will lose their ID, and so we run ID clinics. Visiting doctors will come, visiting legal services, Centrelink visits. So it's all of those services that someone who doesn't have a home and is living either on the streets or in a temporary, unstable accommodation, needs those elements in order for them to get an application into the housing wait list so they can be considered and or have some of their basic fundamental needs attended to.
Yeah, of course. So you don't provide like any housing there or anything like that?
Well, I don't think anyone can provide housing. So
no, of course, no.
We can refer them to crisis accommodation, places like the Beacon, or the Vinnie DePaul's run one as well. So if there are vacancies, so we link them into crisis accommodation if we can get crisis accommodation, depending on their circumstance. And obviously, the key way to get housing is to get on the housing application list. That's held within the, you know, within the government department. We're in a stage, I think, you know, in another couple of years we'll see more housing coming online, and, you know, the housing minister's doing a really good job. But at the moment, as he would also say, there's just nowhere for people to go.
Yeah, for sure. So this drop-in centre, it's been there since the late 50s. That's a long time for pretty much anywhere to stay in Perth. Why does it need to be relocated?
So one of the other areas that I spoke about is that we provide services in family and domestic violence, and we've continued to see rates of family and domestic violence increase, particularly during the COVID, during the pandemic.
Of course.
And so we are going to rebuild that site that we own into an integrated service for women and children. And so in order to do that, we wanted to relocate the homelessness engagement hub, or drop-in centre as you call it, in an area that still provides access to our client group. And so, you know, since last September, I think, or August, we've been searching for appropriate properties to lease. We've probably done about 120 searches and found this property on James Street.
So you need to move this place so that you can start to build bigger projects and sort of look into the future.
Well, we're building a service to actually try to attend to and change the issue around family and domestic violence. So it's not as though we're saying, well, we're going to do this. This is more of a preference. They are both pressing issues.
Yeah.
And that's been our commitment as an organisation, to being an organisation that works towards solving the issues. The respective issues, so for example, family and domestic violence and homelessness.
Yeah, so you found a spot that was like 200 metres just around the corner. And I imagine that's quite beneficial for, you know, for people who use these services to have a spot that's nearby to somewhere that's familiar and centralised. What were some of the benefits of this new location?
I think the benefits are it's an area that we've operated in. It is close to public service amenities for clients. Where we have other visiting services, they know us, they know the location. And it's the area where there are the greatest numbers of homelessness. So regardless of the rhetoric in the media currently that homeless people who are experiencing homelessness come because the services are there, no, that's just not true. Because if you look at cities all around the world, you come to cities if you're experiencing homelessness or hardship because the resources and the broader amenities are in that space.
You are listening to Indie Media on RTRFM 92.1, and we're chatting to Deborah from Rua Community Services after the City of Perth knocked back plans for them to relocate their community centre. And you just started talking about that, of some of the rhetoric around, you know, centralisation of homelessness, and a lot of the rhetoric coming out of the council is that Perth and Northbridge are carrying too much of the burden. And that's just like unrealistic. Like you say, that's where homelessness tends to congregate. Why was the plan rejected by the city?
So the officers of the City of Perth made the actually were of the view that it didn't actually need to go to council, that it could be approved by the city officers for planning. So that would have occurred, you know, some 6 to 8 weeks earlier, which was in our time frame. Obviously, we've been engaging with the city through the whole process. But within the constitution, councillors can call the application to the council floor and debate it. And effectively, that sort of signifies that they don't believe that the officers had delegated authority to make the decision. It should be made by council. And so in doing that, and obviously we've had some people in the area who will be our neighbours, you know, complain quite loudly to the council, which is their right, that they didn't want this amenity, this service in this particular area. And so it went to full council last Tuesday night, and one of the councillors put an alternate resolution, which was to not approve the use of the building we were proposing to lease for the use of a community use.
Right.
And voted unanimously in favour against it.
Right. So did they offer any alternatives? Is there a plan that they would be willing to back?
No. Not at this point. You know, I still have further conversations to have with the City of Perth. But I think, you know, and this is my view, listening to the rationale and the explanation for the decisions from the councillors, is that they don't believe that this kind of service, or even anything like the service, equally the women's and children's services, has a place in the City of Perth.
Yeah, it feels like this is part of a broader issue, and not just about, you know, that one particular site. It seems the City of Perth is just not really keen to have that many homelessness services in the city.
Look, I think that, you know, I think that's a pretty logical conclusion one could draw from the current discussions that we've heard. And so, you know, my view is that the city of Perth is a city for all people, and people experiencing homelessness do come to our services, which are based in the city of Perth, for that particular support. So, I think whatever way you pitch this utopic view that if you didn't have the people that we work with in the city, that somehow the city would be free from violence and free from antisocial behaviour and all the other things that apparently detract from the amenity, I just don't think is correct, nor do I think it's reasonable.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you there. And sorry for getting a little bit editorial with that question.
No.
So what impact does this knocking back have on your services, and what's next?
Well, I suppose what the impact is that, you know, we have a timeline in terms of the new build. I might also say that, you know, the development application for the Women and Children's Centre goes on. The development application panel was made up of, I think, three other members and two councillors, and both of those councillors voted against the development application for a Women and Children's Centre. So it's a bigger issue for us in the community services sector about the willingness for the city to accept that people who are vulnerable and who are struggling have a place in the city. So for us, obviously, the first critical thing is I am committed and will continue to deliver a service to people experiencing homelessness in the city of Perth that we have historically been providing services to. I obviously need to look